So we talked about the Rambam's middle road, middle approach, it should be extreme, it should be radical. We said that there are two exceptions. One exception, remember, is you shouldn't get angry. Get anger out of your system. The sooner you get anger out of your system. Guys, listen. Anger is like any other midah. There is no onesh for any midah. You know what the onesh for a midah is? Hashem doesn't have to give you an onesh. It's a lot of shame on my son. If you eat nevela, you get an onesh. If you chal Shabbos, you get an onesh. If you steal, you get an onesh. What's the onesh for a bad midah? It's a bad midah. You know what the onesh for being jealous is?
Being jealous.
You spend your whole life being envious of what other people have, and you can't appreciate what you have. About 20 years ago, there was a scandal in Houston. Houston in the early 2000s and the late 90s had this huge, huge economic boom fueled by energy sector, a lot of energy and oil. And they had these heads of corporations who were making $70, $80, $90 million a year, and they were skimming funds from their corporation. They caught them and they put them in jail for 20 years. So there was a newscaster who had an interview with one of these corporate heads, and he said, I got to ask you the following question. You had enough money to live your whole life in luxury, your children could live in luxury, your grandchildren could live in luxury, you had all the money you could ever want. I don't know what I would do with $80 million. Why did you take the extra three, and now you're going to sit in jail rotting for 20 years? And the guy looked at the newscaster and said, yeah, I had 80, but the other guy next to me had 200. I needed to have 200. What's the difference between 80 and 200? There's no big difference. Got to be the highest paid sport. Got to be the highest paid quarterback. Highest paid center. You got to be the highest paid ship. If you're jealous, you're jealous. I just never enjoyed such a sad, sad scene when people have so much and they just, you can't buy happiness. You just can't. Sometimes more is less. Sometimes less is more. I promise you, sometimes less is more. Sometimes thank yourself that you don't have after worrying, jealous, and just be happy. You got to be happy with what you have. In life and in Ruchnius. You got to be happy with what Hashem gives you. You want to do more. You know how many more people I want to teach and more people I want to... Okay, this is what Hashem gives me. I'll do my best with what Hashem gives me. I'll try my hardest. Not like whatever Hashem wants me to do. If Hashem wants me to teach more Torah, he'll give me the opportunity. You have to be satisfied in Ruchnius. You know what the punishment for being angry is? You've met those people who are always angry. Not nice to live with people who are angry. It's not pleasant to live. You try to run away from people that are angry. I don't like people that shout at me. They're full of anger. It's putting you off. It's not making you feel comfortable and safe. And spend your whole life being angry. And here's the big one. The worst trait for guys your age, what I mean is 16, 15-year-old smart guys, it's called cynicism. Smart people are more cynical than non-smart people because you know what non-smart people do when they see something great? Wow, that's great. That's incredible. Incredible person. Incredible movie. Incredible whatever. Experienced person. You know what smart people do when they see something great? They're smart enough to analyze and overanalyze and find the flaw. And then they blow up the flaw and they reject the person. The idea. Oh, yeah, he's great, but... They actually trace this mentally, doing a lot of mental, as I put it, they're doing a lot of mental mapping that there's a place in the brain that's responsible for cynicism and that smart people have a larger portion of that in their brain.
What is cynicism?
Cynicism is just sarcasm, always rejecting, always finding fault, always finding flaw. If you're asking the question, you're in good shape, all right? You don't know what it is. I'm happy. Be very, very careful about the following form of entertainment. What am I going to warn you about? Bad language, bad pictures and images, of course. But you know what else you have to be careful about? Comedians. There's a lot of comedians that are really, really cynical. And you want to listen to them because you'll become cynical. I don't know if you guys ever watched the program, probably did, but the worst thing that ever happened to Am Yisrael is they found the program they thought was great to watch, but there's this culture creep and it's seeping to them. And you know which program I'm talking about? You may have heard of it. No bad language. No bad images. It's called Seinfeld. This entire program about cynicism, making fun of people, sarcasm, stealing, lying, cheating, deceiving, disrespectful. And then, okay, there's no bad pictures here. No bad, I can... No second worst show to ever happen. It's called The Simpsons. Not that I watch too many. It's all about making fun of people. Okay, if you're able to distance yourself, it's one thing, but believe me, you're still young enough that it creeps in. And you watch enough of these programs, you're going to be that person. You're going to be cynical and rejecting and you're too smart for yourself and everyone has a flaw. And then you know what happens to cynical people? Let me tell you the storyline, the timeline for cynical people. You start to reject people in your world. This person is not good enough, and that's not enough, and this is terrible. This is... And then the noose tightens, and you start to be cynical to people closer into your orbit, closer into your radius, your friends, your family. You know what happens when you run out of people to be cynical about? There's only one person left to target. And then you become the bitter old person in Shul that you've met. From the whole world is out to get him. And everyone is terrible. And believe me, you don't want to be that person. So work at these traits, guys, especially cynicism. If you have cynical leanings, work hard. And like every trait, the best way to change it is to be osmosis. Find people who don't have that trait or excel in the antithesis and get close to them. And none of them are usser because they're so toxic. There's no isser to be jealous. It's isser to try to steal. It's not isser to be jealous. It's just a terrible trait. It's isser to be cynical. It's one trait. One trait that's usser. What trait is that? No. I just had this conversation with my kids in shul. If you desire your friend's wife, you're not over in Lotachma. It's a terrible trait. You're only over Lotachma if you make efforts to steal her. There can't be an isser. Again, it's a terrible trait. Don't get me wrong, but the isser of Lotachma, ironically... Right, famous question. If you see a blind person walking down the street and you trip them, you're not over l'fnei. That's what the pasuk says. Don't trip a blind person. According to Moshe Sharma, you're not over l'fnei, because Chazal interpreted l'fnei to mean don't give bad advice, don't deceive people, don't delude people. But if you actually trip someone, and you may be over other yisurim, like we have to learn the kamacha, the yisur of mazik, a lot of other yisurim. But there's only one trait that's astral. Let me tell you the story. We spoke a lot about the smog this year. Smog. There's a Sefer Smog. What does Smog stand for? Sefer Mitzvos Gadol. It's written by Rabbeinu Moshe of Kutzi, French. And he went around all Am Yisrael trying to get them to perform a mitzvah that had fallen into disuse. What mitzvah in Spain and France in the 13th century were people not being mekayim that much? Tzitzis. He went on a tzitzis mission. Sometimes you have people that like are able to go on these missions for mitzvahs and restore mitzvahs that were lost, like Tchelach. I remember in my day when I was a little kid, there'd be an old Jew that would come around the yeshivas, my grade school from Williamsburg, and he would tell us about some mitzvah that we hadn't heard of, that we had to be careful about. You know what that mitzvah was? Shatnez. It was in a one-man mission to bring shatnez awareness. Today, Baruch Hashem, you buy suits more or less from Jewish places or places in Jewish communities that are sensitive to shatnez, and this is shatnez. We had nothing. There was nothing. I went to the store, I went to Barney's, and I bought a suit. And Barney's had no clue what shatnez. It sounded like some African trinket or something. Shatnez, what are you? So he went around. We used to cut out a little piece. He would give us a little envelope, and we'd bring it home, and a little razor was in the envelope. We'd cut off a little bit of thread from under the collar. We'd put it in the envelope and mail it to Williamsburg, and we'd get a letter back before internet whether there's shatnez or not. Today, Baruch Hashem, there's chemical ways to test them. Baruch Hashem, today, 99% of the suits you're buying are not shatnez. And again, if you go into a normal store in a Jewish community, certainly in Eretz Yisrael, but even in Jewish communities, if you go into Montana somewhere and you buy a store suit in some non-discriminate store, you have to be careful not to check for shatnez. So the smog was on a mission to try to help people. So he wrote a mitzvah, say for mitzvah skadl. And he worked really hard. There's no computers and no delete buttons and no copy and print. And the night before he was about to go to print, a malach visited him in a dream. And the malach said, "You forgot a mitzvah." What mitzvah? There's an isser. What isser? One trait is usser. What's that trait? Arrogance. This week's parsha, V'ram levavecha v'shachachtas. Arrogant people can't think of Hashem. They're thinking about themselves too much. There are two types of traits you have to work on, guys. One is called selfishness, one is called self-centeredness, which is worse. Self-centered is much worse. Selfish means you don't share, you're too frugal, you don't give your french fries. It's important to be generous, trust me. You gotta be generous. And generosity is not just with your food and your money, it's with your time. When's the last time, good question, mental experiment, when's the last time you gave your time to someone when you didn't want to? That's called generosity. You have your time, you want to accomplish something, someone comes over and needs your time to talk to you, to ask you something, to do an errand for something. It's hard. Generosity. I've got a really busy schedule. My schedule is jam-packed. Every night I go to bed, and most of the days when I go to bed, with rare exceptions, my list is growing rather than receding, which is a really bad feeling. I start with a list of things I want to do that day. It just grows by the end of the day. I want it to be limited. I want it to be pared down. Someone comes over and says, "Rebbe, I have to talk to you." So I just have to put on a smile. Of course, I want to try to help you out as much as I can. That's called generosity. I'm not always good at it, but I try to be good at it. Don't be selfish. But selfishness is just one trait. Self-centeredness, that's a bad one. That's where you think the world revolves around you. and your needs and me and everything's. I know a lot of people who are self-centered and not selfish. I know a lot of people who are selfish and not self-centered. They're two totally separate traits. But if you're self-centered, it's really hard to be thinking about Hashem. So the Malach told him, you got to add this Isser to your list of 613. What's the problem the Smog has now? There's no 614, which itself is an interesting question. Who says? Who says it's only 613? What? No, Avram. Go on, Avram. What is the reason we eat pomegranates in Rosh Hashanah? Come on, guys. What? Who was in Gush yesterday? The last three fruits to ripen in Israel are grapes, which are in full bloom now. The grapes are delicious now. Over Shabbos, stop off at a makola. Bring your host some grapes. That's a really good gift to bring. They are so delicious. I piled off a whole box of them. I was sitting there eating like, I don't know, like Caligula, like some Roman emperor eating grapes. Eating the grapes one after another. Grapes?
Dates?
No, dates are much earlier.
Pomegranates.
Pomegranates and olives. Olives the second to last, pomegranates are the last because they're the most complex structure. If you ever open a pomegranate, it's a very complex fruit. It goes through different stages, the crown, the flower. So we eat it on Rosh Hashanah because that's when it ripens. And it demonstrates at the end of the agricultural season, now we want to turn our minds to more spiritual matters. So we leave the field and come into the Beis HaMedrash, the Beis HaKnesses, to be more spiritual, because now the harvest is over. How do you call people in from the field? Shofar. You blow a shofar for people to come in from the field and stop working. This is all a medrash. How do we know that a shofar is a sound to stop working? When do we blow a shofar to stop working? Yovel. That's where we learn shofar from. That's the sound of liberty. Ah, that's why the liberty bell sound. You should proclaim liberty throughout the land. That's why we eat a pomegranate. It does not have 613. And the second reason we eat a pomegranate is because the Pasuk in Shir Hashirim says, the man is telling his wife, Am Yisrael, Hashem is telling Am Yisrael, your cheeks are like the, what do they call, you know, the white stuff in between the orange and the white stuff. It's called the... There's something white. The skull. There's some word for it. It's very rich in vitamin C. The white between the fruit and the shell. There's some word for it. I used to eat it a lot because it's very, very rich. And it's really great. You just take an orange and shave it. It's very, very healthy. The pulp. Not the pulp. No. What? There's some word for it. Anyway, so in Shir Hashirim, the man is telling the woman, your cheeks are like the fill in the blank of a pomegranate. You and I want. Chazal Darshan this, that Kefela Harimon Rakasech, your cheeks or your temples are like the white, whatever you'd call it, of a rimon. And Chazal say, Afilu Rekanim Shabo, even Rishoyim. Rakasech, Afilu Rishoyim, Rekanim, they're empty mitzvahs, Rakasech, Rekanim, even Rishoyim, who have no mitzvahs, they have zchuyos like a rimon. They may look empty, but there's this part of the rimon, which is because in Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, we want everyone to daven together, even Rishayim. What do we say on Yom Kippur to get everyone to daven together? What do we call that? Where everyone's together, we're trying to build everyone together. What do we call that? What? Kol Nidre. Kol Nidre means we're now removing any bands. Everyone should come daven. Kol Nidre, v'charame, v'kinu yehe, v'chiyu yehe. That's why I'm not a chazan. Din darna, we're saying we're removing the bands and everyone should come and daven together. So we eat a rimon to show that even the empty people, Rakosesh, we got him, are Malay Mrs. Karima. Shimon.
Two things. You said that...
we have to get back to this year, guys.
The darsh, the pasuk, to be like referring to Kriya. So is that the basis for the Yerazim?
Yeah, yeah. Yerazim is Kriya and Karima. Exactly. That's the medrash. Very good. Correct.
And also the thing about like everyone davening in the little like three lines we say with... Before we say like the
cold interparable.
Yeah, exactly. The third line is
very good.
Is
you must have a father's tamachach. Anu matirim l'spal et nevar
yadim. Even people in
chayrim. Very good, exactly. And what's the pasuk we end with? Vinislach l'chol adas b'nei Yisrael v'lager gar b'socham ki l'chalam b'shkaga. I come from a family of chazan. So yeah, excuse me. Ki l'chalam b'shkaga. My problem is during September in Elul, I always have this phlegm in my voice. I'm always like, I'd love to daven for the Yamud, and I know the Nusuch, but I can never count. Like one year I was all slated to daven, and then like, I couldn't get the phlegm out to cancel. So if I move to Australia, I could be a chazan. Why would that help me in Australia? Because in Australia, Rosh Hashanah is the beginning of summer. That's the beginning of fall. So in Australia, you're getting ready for the spring. So here, you're getting ready for the winter. God, my throat gets full of blood. Okay, so we're talking about arrogance, and arrogance is usher, and the Sma got a problem because it's only 613 mitzvahs, so you have to play around. He took Geneva. What's a cousin of Geneva? Where else in Halacha are you stealing money? And maybe we could put him as one issa to Geneva.
Interest,
very good. What else?
Zayla.
What's the cousin of interest?
Oh, God.
This third, this is a gazela. There's interest. What do you call interest in Hebrew? Ribbis. Right? And what's the cousin of ribbis? When else do you take money that's not yours? Oh, no. When you're overcharged. We just had a really interesting question in my family. We're thinking about, I was talking to my kids about it. My daughter just finished 2 years. Not really an orphanage, but it's like an orphanage with kids who had to be forcibly removed from their homes. Violence, sexual abuse, all sorts of crazy stuff. I mean, really crazy stories. So she was like their mother for 2 years. And she took them to the doctor, she took them to school, took them shopping, taught them how to live. Anyway, so in the end of their shiur, in the end of their experience, they were given computers by the local welfare division of the government. They were given a laptop. Now these kids, they don't know how to use computers. Like one of the kids, you know, just to show you where they come from and how much you have to be grateful for, turned to my daughter and says, like, what does it mean in a month from now? How long is a month from now? Like, they don't know how to tell time. Like, they have such a little background, they don't know how to tell time. Even basic skills, like just how to protect their bodies or protect themselves, or just simple skills. So they gave them a laptop because the government has money for it. But these, you know what they're doing. So my son, who's in high school, offered to buy the laptop from one of these girls who just, you know. So one of the questions we had was, what's the girl going to use the money for? But that's not our issue. The other question is, like, how to set a price? Because when we have to set for a price, you know, X. But that's not fair. It's not fair to her to give her less than market value. So you have to be careful. Don't just try to, like, sometimes people just need to sell quickly. They need to leave town. They need to, I mean, don't buy something from someone who needs to leave town because there may be other people who come calling at your door. But someone needs to move to Israel or something, or needs to have a quick sale, or wants to exchange, or one stop grade. Don't, like, oh, I'm about to leave town by in 2 hours. I want to buy this car. Like, no thanks. I'm moving on. You know, probably someone's going to come and kneecap me for the car in a couple hours. But so you have to be careful not to overcharge. So the smog took a couple of these Isser and Ribbis and Ona and condensed them into one Isser and therefore made room for them Isser of arrogance. Anyway, so the Rambam says you should be very, very humble. How does the Rambam know that humility should be radicalized? You should be very, very humble. Which pasuk in the Torah, which word in the Torah teaches the Rambam that you should be very, what's the word in Hebrew for very, very? Me'od. When does the Torah use the word me'od in the context of humility? Vayish Moshe. Okay, you cheated. Vayish Moshe Anav. Whenever I ask a question, first thing to do is look at the Shidke. Vayish Moshe Anav me'od mikol Adam. And then there was a Tana who said, you know what, that's not enough. He's a Tana we have very, very little information about. His name was Levitas Ish Yavne. He's probably a Levi, right? Levitas. Probably a bit of a Greek name. He was influenced by Greek. Which famous Tana had a Greek-sounding name? Antigonus Ishsocho. Antigonus, very interesting. Very interesting that the Tanayim were influenced by the surroundings. Levitas sounds a little bit Greekish. Levitas, it's a play on Levi. Levitas Ishyavna. He lives in Yavne. What?
Pi for Moshe.
Levitas Ishyavna. So what did he say?
Me'od,
me'od, havei shifal ruach. Be very, very humble. So he took the one me'od and he doubled it up. Ve'ish Moshe anav me'od. Levitas ish yavne. Me'od, me'od, havei shifal ruach. Now, how do you become humble? Okay, this is the question of the day. It's really hard to talk about humility, obviously, because if anyone says, I'll teach you to be humble, and that's called sanctimony. I'm a humble guy. That's false piety. So it's a really hard thing to talk about honestly without just pontificating. But these are some of the ways you're humble. First of all, humility does not mean you deny who you are. Humility means you accept who you are, but you have two things going in your favor. One is you realize it's a God-given trait, and even your accomplishments were helped by Hashem and Siyata Deshmaya, and you're just an agent, and you're proud of what you accomplished, but you don't like get to your head, and you know the source. I told you guys earlier this year, that's why it's important to understand. Okay, we'll talk about two things today. I don't want to take too much time, since you have time in the base medrash. We'll talk about two things today. Here are two passwords to humility. You want to enter your humility account, humility@gmail.com? Here are the two passwords. Either password will get you in. First password, fragility. You've got to be in touch with fragility. You have to understand your vulnerability. You have to understand your weakness. You're not as great as you think you are. It could all come crashing down in a moment. You go for 3 minutes without oxygen, you're not sitting here in NCS White Collar listening to my shiur and going and playing sports today. You are, God forbid. I told you guys in yeshiva, we have the Darkenu program, the special needs children, and I tell the boys every once in a while, you know the difference between that room and this room, because they sit right next to us in the classroom. The difference is 3 minutes of oxygen. Or you were born regularly, and they were born with the umbilical cord wrapped around their neck. And it's not your fault, it's not their fault, your seat. It's all a question of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu has in store for you, and that every time you travel on a road, you're in greater danger. I wanted to talk about this the other day. If you get on a bus today to go to Yerushalayim or to get some pizza, you're in far greater danger than when you're on a plane. I don't recite Tefillah Sederach when I'm on a plane. Even if I fly to America, I do not recite Tefillah Sederach. I'm sorry, Berachas Hagomel. Of course I recite Tefillah Sederach. I recite Berachas Hagomel. Why? Because I don't feel that I'm in danger. Or statistically, I'm a lot safer than crossing the street in Cedarhurst. Statistically, there are more people, or five people who died on the Long Island Highway 2 days ago. A wrong-way driver killed five people. And far, far fewer people die in airline accidents across the world. So you realize how fragile it is. You realize how temporal it is. You realize how it all... That's why it's so important, guys. Really listen to me. If you're looking for something to change next year, here's a good idea. Try to find an opportunity, if you can. You may not be able to. You're not adults. You can't find it on your own, but maybe it's there, and if it's there, go for it. To really be involved in what I call hard chesed, not soft chesed. What's the difference between hard chesed and soft chesed? This is soft chesed, because I ask this question on interviews to the yeshiva. I say, tell me, do you do any chesed? And a lot of times I get the following answer. Yes, I'm a Madrich on Bnei Akiva, I'm a counselor in camp, I'm an NCSY, I run the youth minion, I run groups, I lane, which is great. I'm in no way devaluing those, but that's soft chesed. It means you're giving up of your time, which is great. Then there's hard chesed. You know what hard chesed is? Handicapped kids. Older people. Sick people. Poor people. You know how hard chesed is defined? Encountering hardship, people who are going through hard times. Being an NCSY counselor, or being a madrich, or being in shul is not hard times. You're just there to help people, daven and shul, take care of the kids, which is great. Hard chesed means hard times. And it's uncomfortable for people to meet people who are going through hard times, because then it reminds you know what, I could be there. I don't know, I want everyone in this room, okay? Mental experiment, I like to make it personal for you. Think about someone your age, obviously, don't tell me. Someone you know that has a really, really, really hard life, your age, around your, it doesn't have to be exactly your age. They are handicapped. They are poor. They are ill. They have a parent who is ill. They were in an accident. People who really suffer, people your age who suffer. What is the difference in you and them? How many degrees separate you and them? What would it take when an honey comes to my door? I try to think about that just to put myself in his shoes. What would it take for roles to be reversed? I'm sitting, Baruch Hashem, in a comfortable house with my family, giving money, and he's in a boiling hot sun, walking from house to house, humiliating himself, and I give everyone that comes to my door my time, my smile, and my money. I give a big smile because I have a lot of it in me. And I give as much time as I can. I have a lot of it in me because I can't give that much money because I don't have a lot of that, so I try to compensate with the smile and the respect. And I try to imagine, what would it take for me to be in his shoes? Not that much. Stock market crashing, chas v'shalom, an accident, chas v'shalom, something that's totally out of my control. So Baruch Hashem, I'm on this side of the threshold, he's on the other side of the threshold, but it doesn't make me better or superior. So think about that boy that you know. What's really the difference between you and them? The 5 seconds at birth, the accident that you're not in control of that he had or you didn't have, the cancer that he has or she has that you didn't have or whatever. Hard chesed is really, really, really valuable because you realize how fragile it is and you don't let it get to your head. It could all disappear tomorrow. Hard chesed. I remember once I met a boy who I think really needed hard chesed. So I accepted him on condition that he did the hardest chesed possible. I told him he had to go clean graves. Part of the chesed options in his community was that boys going out and cleaning the graves. I said, I want you to go clean graves because I want you to face mortality and limits and we don't live forever. And you're not as great as you think you are. And they'll accept your own condition. I always like sometimes give conditions. You have to finish Masechta, start going to Minyan. You have to pay me a bride. Not, I mean, you have to do all sorts of things again to the yeshiva. Don't worry, the bride. So, yeah. I just wanted to be known, maybe tell the 11th graders that if they show up to the interview with some Dunkin' Donuts, let's just say I'm in a better mood, okay? And if I'm in a better mood, then it's a little bit easier to get accepted to the yeshiva. So that's just a little secret about how to... I'm not saying it's tit for tat, donuts for acceptance. Just let's say that I enjoy donuts very much and it makes me happy. And when I'm happy, I tend to be more generous. Just teasing. I get my own donuts. Anyway, so the first thing is you have to be exposed to fragility. Second part of chesed, second part of being humble and modest, you have to be exposed to greatness. Those are the two bookends that will help you be humble. A, fragility. B, greatness. Because when you're exposed to greatness, then you put your own accomplishments into perspective. That's always important to be with great people. People your age that are better than you. Rabbanim who are obviously more accomplished than you. Because then you could put yourself into perspective because you see things larger than yourself. And that's why Moshe Rabbeinu, let me have your pen, could take a pen and write the following statement. If I wrote this, it would be sanctimonious. It would be false piety. I am humble. It's ridiculous. How can I write that I'm humble? But Moshe wrote it. What did Moshe write? Where is Moshe on a meod? He wrote it.
Very humble.
Why did he write it? Because Moshe Rabbeinu knew, look at my hands, and Am Yisrael was here. And that he was here, based on his accomplishments. But he knew that Am Yisrael was here, and he was here. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu was here. So whatever his accomplishments were, vis-a-vis Am Yisrael, were puny. When you see infinity, when you see Hashem clearly, that's a recipe for humility. I have to tell you, this may sound heretical, but I really mean it. I can imagine, begin to imagine what Hashem is. Because I saw Rav Lichtenstein, and I just saw such greatness in every aspect that in my mind, if I just multiply it by 15 trillion billion times, it's not really true, because Hashem isn't human, it's comparing apples and oranges. But at least in my mind, you got to see greatness, you got to see godless, you got to see so that, okay, so... Look at who you're meeting this summer, just in this 3-4 weeks. Okay, so you know, I always like seeing guys that come to yeshiva, and then all of a sudden, you're like, I finished 6th blot in DRS or MTA or DBC, and I won the Velt Victoria. And then all of a sudden, you come to yeshiva, and the guy next to you knows Shas 3 times, and he made 4 siyum, and he's your age, and basically, you know, you're nothing. And then you start working, and then you start plugging. And that's real humility, not self-denial. You know exactly who you are. You know you are an ish. V'ha ish Moshe. That's why the Torah says v'ha ish Moshe. You know you're an ish. You know you're accomplished and talented, handsome. You know what you are. But it doesn't register. Because it can be taken from you in an instant and you know you're not even close to what you can accomplish. You know what that's called in English? It's really important. It's called poise. When you see people of poise, that means they know who they are, but it doesn't inflate who they think they are. I don't know if they cleared the board, but this is a permanent mark. Imagine I have a piece of paper. I ask them to clean it up. Here's a mathematical equation. Write it down. Poise, like 10 equals 5 plus 5. Poise equals x plus y. You know how you're poised? Poise equals confidence plus limitations. You're confident in what you are. You understand your limits because you're fragile and you know what other people have more than you. That leads to poise. I can tell you what I am because I know what I'm not. And I can tell you what I am because chas v'shalom, it could disappear in an hour. And I'm not proud of it. I just want to use HaKadosh Baruch Hu's tools as best as I can to be an Eved Hashem. Ana Avdekut Jibruchu with as many hours as He gives me on this planet. Ana Avdekut Jibruchu. And that's real humility. Not the myth of self-abnegation. You guys have to prepare for SATs, I promise, right? Better words, I'll give you some SAT words. Not the myth of self-abnegation. You abnegate yourself, or you abdicate yourself, or you minimize yourself, or you... It's not self-abnegation. You know exactly who you are, you amplify yourself, you express your talents, you grow. And that's why, and this will end because I want to get you back to the base matters. That's why, you know what the real own age for you, for arrogance is? you forget your Torah. Moshe calls Yoshua, the Gemara in Timura says, Moshe calls Yoshua, source number 5, into the room before he's about to die and says, Yoshua, you have any questions for me? And Yeshua says, no, I'm good to go. And that day, look at source number 5, Yoshua forgets, how many halachas? 300 halachas. What was it, an onesh? Because he was arrogant? Yeshua was arrogant. But you know how you remember Torah? This is a really cool idea, guys. Are you listening? If I ask you to tell me the score of the NBA Finals or the Super Bowl or the Stanley Cup, choose your sport, whichever sport you're really excited about, and the last time your team won or the last time your pitchers, whatever stats are in your mind, from 5 months ago or 10 months ago, you could tell me, right? If I ask you your birthday, you could tell me. If I ask you your parents' anniversary, I hope you could tell me. If I ask you Torah you learned 5 months ago when that same game was played, you'd probably have a hard time telling me. So what's the conclusion? Memory is not just a mental skill. Memory is a choice. Things that we value more deeply, we remember. Things that we value less deeply, we don't remember, right? Because you remember the sports score from 5 months ago because that's something you value. The Tosfos you learned that day, you don't remember. Obviously, you don't value it as much. At some level, you want to value it, but it's just not as visceral to your identity. And you don't remember it. Rav Aaron once told me that if you, listen to this, if you don't understand the Tosfos, that is not a mental limitation, that is a moral flaw. You just don't care enough. If you really cared about the Tosfos, you would understand it. If you knew, let me give you a different example. Let's say you were stricken with some strange virus and you knew that there was no antidote for it. What would you do? You'd spend a year trying to find an antidote, and you may find it because you'd work, you'd scour the world, you'd speak to scientists, you'd try combinations, you'd do everything possible to save your life if you knew your life depended on it. So when I'm sitting there thinking about Hashem all day long, then of course I'm remembering His Torah because it's the only thing in my mind. Hashem, Hashem, I want to know Your Torah. I want to know Your Torah. It's eternal. And I get it this moment. I want to know Your Torah. Look at me. I want to know Your Torah. I want to know Your Torah. So it's helping me understand, helping me retain. Look at what I'm about to do right now. The second I turn a little bit away from Hashem, then of course I'm going to forget Torah because remembering Torah is not just mental. It's also where I am. This is what Yoshua did that day that Moshe was about to pass away. It wasn't major because it was Yoshua, but it was a little bit. Yoshua's whole life, Moshe, serving Moshe, serving Hashem. He didn't turn like this because it was Yoshua. He just turned like this, a little bit, 1 degree. 1 degree turning away from Hashem. He forgot 300 halachas. Not an onesh. Hashem didn't tap him on the lip and say, make him forget halachas. The fact that a little bit of self-worth crept into, oh, now I'm Yoshua, I'm the guy. Moshe's about to be Nifter, I'm going to take over. Again, it wasn't as self-centered as we may have been, or the way I'm describing it just for educational purposes. But the fact that Yoshua had a little bit more of a sense of self means that he had a little bit less of a sense of Hashem. A little bit less of Hashem in the room means you're going to forget your Torah. Because other things matter. That's why the punishment for being arrogant is you forget your Torah. It's not a punishment. It's a result. The greatest, as I said earlier today, the greatest punishments in life are results, not punishments. You know the difference between a punishment and a result or a reward and a result? If I tell you, if you go to sleep on time tonight, I'll give you some candy tomorrow, that's a reward. If I tell you, if you go to sleep on time tonight, you'll have a good day tomorrow, you'll be full of energy and health, and you'll accomplish a lot and feel really good about yourself, that's a result. The Torah is about results, not about rewards and punishments. Hashem doesn't give rewards and punishments, only not miserable. He gives results. You want to live a good life? Be firm. I promise you, it's the best way to lead your life. You lead a different life, you'll have a harder life. And if you don't lead a spiritual life at all, you know what happens in the next world? In the next world, you guys, who brought some of their American appliances? Who has an American appliance here? Did you bring a radio? I don't know what you bring. Who has a plug? A plug for a phone charger? Try plugging it into an Israeli outlet, doesn't work. Right? You need a converter? We call it Israel Chupchik. Everything in Israel, Chupchik. We need a Chupchik. A little converter. What, we're punishing the American plug that it doesn't fit into an Israeli outlet? It's not a punishment, it's just not compatible. The next world is spiritual. If you're not spiritual in this world, you're just not compatible in the next world, because the next world has no food and no sports and no body and no spirituality. You don't fit. What do we call not fitting in the next world? It's called kares. Kares isn't a punishment, it's just you end. In no place. You don't fit the plug. Plug doesn't go in. Kares isn't a punishment from Hashem. Kares means you end. There's no place for you. You just roam. You're out. You're gone. The next world is spiritual. You fit. Or you don't fit. You don't fit. You have Kares. Okay, let's stop here. Sugya, 11 o'clock shir. However, to understand the shir, you need to know as follows.